live in about 15 minutes. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter. This is Bloomberg. All right, Doug.
All right, we're going to Kuala Lumpur next, where Silas Jha is based. He is the chief economist, also the head of market research at RHB Banking Group. Silas, always a pleasure to have the chance to chat with you, particularly when it comes to your neck of the woods, your expertise, the Asia Pacific. Talk to me about what you expect the growth story to be in China now that we're seeing a huge relaxation of these COVID restrictions.
Well, so this is the recent change in policy, and how we would characterize the forward looking view is this is an on-again, off-again policy. We just don't know, you know, how long this change in policy will continue, and the depth of it, and what will the variety of measures to relax the COVID-19 zero policy going forward. Highly unpredictable. So for us, the song remains the same, as Led Zeppelin would say. Next year we're at 4% GDP growth. This year at 3%, you know, the official GDP numbers overstate the true reality of what's going on in the economy. We have a number that it's 1.5% is the true number in terms of 1.5% below the official numbers that will ultimately materialize. Bottom line is that without getting into any of the technicalities, things are looking bad in China. We don't see any signs of a real recovery in 2023. And we had also mentioned that with this type of growth, with this year around 1.5%, the true rate of growth, and next year around 2% or so, means that the social unrest will pick up, social instability risks pick up. And that's exactly, we've written about this like a month, 2 months ago, and that's exactly what's happening. So not looking good.
Yeah, to stick with the Led Zeppelin theme, they're not exactly a stairway to heaven, more of a sort of a rocky path.
Yeah,
with
I
steep...
can't use the other word.
No, no, but lots of steep drop-offs, holes in the road. What sort of support do you anticipate coming down the road from policymakers in China?
I think what will continue is continuing loosening of monetary policy, and the idea that they clearly need to depreciate their currency against the dollar. That's kind of what they have left in their toolkit. And what that means is, in the medium term, our thought process is, and of course the timing is always certain, uncertain when it comes to currencies, is that, you know, dollar China, dollar CNH is headed to 7.5 to 8. You know, this recent drop below 7 has been a phenomenal drop, if I may, right? And this is purely due to market sentiment turning, nothing fundamental about it. And when I see moves like this in the currency, it's like, you know, don't know how long it's going to last, but focus on what the end game is. And the end game is this currency is going to depreciate fast to 7.5 to 8. They don't have much room left on the fiscal front. They have a variety of debt issues. I think we've talked about it for years. They're trying to get a handle on that, but the debt problem is going to continue.
Yeah.
Property sector is going to languish. And the industrial sector is just becoming less competitive.
Yeah, we've been asking whether or not a lot of the move that we have seen in risk assets as it relates to China has really been nothing more than short covering, because, you know, so many people have been so negative given the COVID situation. An immediate reversal creates kind of a short squeeze, so you can see a stronger currency and a recovery in some equities. But when I listen to you kind of lay out your thesis here, I'm wondering whether or not we are inherently going to see greater risk begin to develop within the internal structure of the banking system, the lending system within China. Is that a distinct possibility?
Those risks are already there, because what's going on is that the repo market is the primary funder or channel mechanism to injecting liquidity to a variety of sectors, whether it's between banks and corporates, whether it's through banks and the financial markets. And that risk has been on for several years now, and it is going to continue. That's one of the things, is that the plumbing is all jammed with all these issues related to debt, whether it's debt in the private sector or the public sector, or related to those very esoteric wealth management products. Now, will the banks collapse? Probably not. You know, I think that's a very low probability event. Will there be a hard landing? Probably not. But it just means that this is a country that, in terms of the risk reward, is a place where you really don't want to invest for the next several years.
I get the sense you're flipping the narrative on its head in terms of some of the conversations we've been having on the show. A lot of people are sort of optimistic about the China reopening and concerned about the risk of a recession in the U.S. But you feel the U.S. can avoid recession. The pessimism's maybe been a bit overdone. Why is that?
Right. So here's the China narrative. It's because, I mean, this is on a tactical basis. I mean, I don't see anyone out there thinking about medium to long term. So, you know, any market can go up and down on a tactical basis. And it's simply because the buy side, large asset managers and the banks have been so heavily invested in China. And it means that they're basically talking their buck. So obviously, you know, they want the market to go up and hopefully take some profit and cover some of their losses that they've already incurred in the last couple of years. On the U.S. side, you know, look, the characterization of the U.S. is basically a recession that has never come. You know, the market basically was calling, many sell-side analysts were calling for a recession this year. Didn't happen. Now it's pushed to 2023. Part of the market's thinking coming 2024. For us, it's not going to come. We just don't think that, you know, so first of all, let me lay out our forecast. In conclusion, our forecast for 2023, which is more important, is 2%. This year, we have a forecast of 2.2%. The Bloomberg consensus estimate for this year has been revised up to 1.8% from 1.5%, you know, over the last couple of months. And for next year, at 0.4%. How do you get to that 0.4%? Is beyond my comprehension. From an analytical perspective, we've done a lot of work on the U.S. economy because obviously it affects us over here in Asia. There's just no evidence that you can point to. You know, the compelling evidence is the following, all right? What we're seeing from a bottoms-up perspective, from our proprietary indicators, is U.S. economic activity actually accelerated
That's going to keep the Fed even more engaged, and maybe we're looking at a terminal rate well above 5%. I want to give you about 60 seconds. You know, we use the term black swan a lot, and I think let's agree that it is an event where right now the market is assigning extremely low probabilities, something infinitesimal. And I'm wondering if you're going to can go out on a limb and give to me what you see as a potential black swan in 2023.
I think, look, there are three unknowns out there of what, you know, in terms of driving a black swan event. They're always unanticipated, obviously. One, I think, is really the China risk, how bad it really gets out there in China. That's point number one. Two is that all of a sudden the Ukraine-Russia conflict just explodes, and all the stuff that the Russians have been able to ship to a variety of means in terms of commodities, that this stops happening. Commodity prices go up significantly, mm-hmm. much more than where we are. We get stagflation.
Number three, quickly.
Number three, quickly, is that the Fed goes to 7%.
Whoa.
That's clearly not in the price. Whoa. Right? That's a black swan, right? Well, our forecast is 5 to 5.25%. Right?
Well, there's three black swans right there.
Well,
Silas Shah,
we're
out of time. Sorry, Silas Shah, Chief Economist and Head of Market Research at RHB Banking Group.